of the leaves from the magnolia trees in the meadow. King harvest is surely come.
A dry summer then come fall, which I depend on most of all. Hey, rainmaker, can you hear the call? Please let these crops grow tall. Long enough I've been upon skid row, and it's plain to see I've nothing to show. I'm glad to pay those union dues. Just don't judge.
Welcome, everybody, to the Organic Farm Stand that comes to you the first and third Thursday of each month. And we are in May. We are on the first Thursday of May. Am I right about that, Chris?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely May. And what are we like? Two months into this? Yeah, I'm just thinking two months into this national or actually international emergency.
Global meltdown. Absolutely. And somehow we're still here. WPCAN is still on the air, and the Organic Farm Stand still moves forward. And we are also joined by Janelle Beardsley.
Hi.
And Guy Beardsley. Thank you so much for
being
part of the action here today.
Good afternoon.
Nice to hear you guys.
Congratulations to all of us and to our wonderful GM, Steve DiCostanzo, and our ops manager, Rod Richardson. Let's give them a round of applause to everybody.
Yay. For...
Can you guys clap while you're holding a phone?
Hey.
Not easily.
Chris, that you there?
Yes.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So we're in good shape.
We are in good shape.
100%, as a matter of fact.
Yes, we are. And we have a 100% show coming up. We have, it's being the first Thursday of the month, we have our B report coming with Vincent Kay. He'll be with us 10 or 12 minutes or so. And then we have a special guest, Molly Detmers, who is the manager of Common Bond
Store in
Shelton, is it, Guy?
Right. Well, Huntington, actually. Huntington, okay. Part of Shelton.
Yeah. And what we're going to do is check in with Molly about the operation of a store in the time of COVID-19. A small store, and yet it is critical to the entire community in which it exists because it supplies the lifeline, which is food and healthy items, which everybody is craving right now. So we're going to get the skinny on that, find out how that operation works during this kind of time, and I think that will apply also to many small businesses, especially small retail food stores. So this will be Molly Detmers coming at about 12:30 or so. My name is Richard Hill, here with Chris Ferriero. And let's get started, Guy. I was surprised today at what a gorgeous day it is, because I checked the weather every night at the beginning of the week, every other day or so, and it looked like rain all week in Brantford.
We've had plenty of rain. We certainly don't need any more moisture.
Okay, so how's it going up there?
Well, as you've pointed out, it's a beautiful day, but we have not had a whole lot of beautiful days. We've had more rain almost every day. We've had some rain, or at least rain would be there in the night. But what we're interested in and seeing, all the leaves are coming out now. The flowers are in good shape. Janelle has got the greenhouse going in great shape. We've even got some things planted out there, but I've been a little reluctant to go ahead and plant a whole lot more until we get this weekend out of the way, because we've been alerted that we might have as much as some good frost on Saturday morning. And even though we will plant some of the things that certainly frost, they're not bothered by frost. There are other sitchings which certainly are, and we got to keep those in the greenhouse and get those planted after the frost. And we usually consider the frost day, even though officially it's the 15th of May, but we usually say once we get through the first week of frost, first week of May, then we pretty much can start planting some of the other more sensitive materials like tomatoes and peppers, and maybe a little bit too early for peppers, but anyway, eggplant. I would say one other thing here. before we get completely involved. Janelle has done some research on broccoli, and we've had some difficulty growing good broccoli, but in the greenhouse it's still looking good. Jill, what did you say about the broccoli?
Yeah, there's so many diseases that make growing broccoli challenging, at least six different diseases that I'm researching here, to say nothing of the pests that love to chow down on a nice broccoli head or the side shoots. So what we plant out this row cover, a nice light and white fabric that can protect it against flea beetles for the entire life of its growth out in the field. But there are the seeds that we have are organic seeds, but they have been created so that plants will be resistant to downy mildew and fusarium and a few other things. So we have a lot of confidence in instigating our new relationship with broccoli here at Guy's Eco Garden, I think.
Good. Jill, might mention to Richard and the radio audience what our procedures here are in the store, because we've changed from what we have been doing in past years to the virus-oriented activities this year.
Right. Well, this would go along with what Molly is going to be discussing, but we have online or through Facebook our seedling listing for the given weekends, and then people email us what they would like, and we prepare their order and then call them back and get their credit card number, and we agree on a time that they come by the farm gate and pick up their order with their name clearly written on it. So it's working out well so far.
How's that sound?
That's great. That's amazing the way everybody's adjusting to this.
Yeah, well, we have to adjust. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Right.
Janelle,
I have to continue here for a little bit before we get Vincent on. The lavender, we've got some replant lavender, because we have to plan on about 10% of the lavender have to be replaced each year. That's just a normal senescence of the way lavender grows or doesn't grow. And so my son-in-law has got a whole bunch of plants out there in the greenhouse just waiting for good weather to come on, and so we'll get those out in the field, replacing those holes in the existing lavender, as well as we're going to put in a couple of new little blocks ourselves on that. And, of course, what we're doing here is, for the radio audience, we're using Stella Natura calendar on our planting areas, and that's important. Right now, we're in good shape on May, almost no problem with May for the most part. But for June, there's a lot of blackout areas in June. There's
so we'll just, you know, you just put the
areas in June.
The hives on the stand, take the other hives off.
Let me just put a word out to, we have Vincent on the line. And
Okay, go ahead.
No, I don't want to cut you off, Guy. I just want to mention to Vincent that you are on the air, Vincent, because we are on the same pot, so please.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
Right,
we're pulling into a bee yard right now.
Yeah, it sounded like your car blinker was going for a little while.
If you could mute your phone, actually, that would be the best. I don't know if you
okay, we'll be quiet. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Guy.
Oh, no, I was going to say we'll turn it over to Vincent, because there is great bee activity weather right now. It has not been earlier. And so we got great peach blossoms and pear blossoms. Apple blossoms, not quite yet.
Okay, really, that's all right. Interesting. I think I guess what I'm seeing is the cherry blossoms. Those are not the fruit-bearing cherry trees, but I forget what they're called. Ornamental cherry trees are in bloom in various places in Brantford. Do not cut yourself short, Guy, because this is this is really critical that we're hearing all this stuff. Is there anything else in terms of planting advice? I actually did put in another blueberry bush in the past week and a half.
Well, that's excellent.
Great.
Yeah, so I now have four in the yard, and I have one little one in a pot on my deck, and they're all looking pretty good. This one is You know, it's I plant. I don't have a whole lot of sun in my yard, so I'm lucky if I get 5 hours. So I picked the little orchard, blueberry orchard, where I have the other ones, and I'm hoping that I'll probably let the birds have at this one for the first season, because it's not an organic blueberry bush, and the other ones I'll try to cover with netting and see if I can get, Leslie and I can get some berries for ourselves, which we did last year, but we had, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 birds we had to untangle from the netting. They got inside the netting.
Oh.
And they fell asleep. As Guy says, they get drunk. They get drunk pretty quick on the blueberries. So we had to sort of get them out of there. But yeah, any last words, Guy, on...
Just a couple of words here before we get it over to Vincent. We like to go with several different varieties of any particular thing. In fact, the tomatoes, we got about 8 kinds of tomatoes, kale, about 4 kinds of kale, beans, several kinds of beans, so that if you have a problem with one kind of whatever that you're trying to plant, that you don't have a monocrop difficulty. And so we like to have everybody with several kinds of each product that you're trying to grow. But we have been receiving notes from various of our customers that the seed situation is not particularly good, because a whole lot of people are deciding this year that they're going to put in their own garden. Hopefully they know what their soil is, what the pH is, and what the nutrients are, and what nutrients they need. But I'm afraid a number of people think that maybe, like Bloomberg says, just put the seed in the ground and watch it grow. Well, that's not exactly what's going to happen unless you have the right ground and take care of it. So anyway, that's what I wanted to cover, and then I will turn it over to Vincent.
Okay, last question for you. As the summer... we can see it coming. Some early produce might normally start popping up in farmers markets. What can you tell us about the prospects for food distribution in the summer? Is it all going to be the type of thing you're doing right from your doorstep, to the curb? Or is there any way that farmers markets will, or CSAs, we'll find a way to meet the public this summer?
Well, I've decided that we are not going into any farmer's market. Now, we decided that sometime in the middle of winter. We just were not going to do that, because the farm has to operate with a minimum of workers. And Janelle, Ed, my son-in-law, and I are going to be the workers this year, as opposed to hiring anybody else. I know that's a sort of a problem with anybody that wants to work, and there's lots of people that need to work, but that's what we're going to do. And so we're going to take care of the farm ourselves, but primarily the emphasis is going to be on plants initially. So that's the plant situation is pretty good for us. I'm not sure how the rest of the radio audience feels about that.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll probably get a good insight into the whole issue of how farmers are going to... I'm going to ask our guest, Molly, when we get her on later, about whether she's going to be doing more direct distribution from local organic farms, which is usually pretty thin up where I am, up in Guilford. The stores that I go to up there, they have a little trickle from the local farmers, but still most of their stuff comes from the West Coast and from other farms, let's say in Pennsylvania. So I want to ask her whether she's really lining up the local farms to be the main distributors of produce in her store, and that may apply to other health food stores as well. So with that, let us welcome our guest, special guest, the B-man, Vincent Kay. Vincent, you got it, man. And just to mention that Vincent is the owner of Swords into Plowshares Honey, which is an institution here in southeastern Connecticut It's been around for how many years, Vincent, has it been in operation?
I think we've been keeping bees and selling honey on that label with that label for about 35 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
Yeah. We just, the noise you were hearing a few minutes ago, my apologies, Guy, we were pulling into a bee yard here in Westbrook, which is where we are now, and there were a couple of deer in the trail. As we were pulling in, or the dogs were kind of getting restless and all that. But that's where we are. We have a very large bee yard in Westbrook, Connecticut, right along the railroad tracks, the Metro North tracks. The train may go by. You may hear it. We often wave to passengers as they go by. But it's a beautiful day. And we were at Sleeping Giant Mountain earlier, and we did a grafting procedure. We made new hives and added new queen bees. And so they're on the truck right now, and my helper John is unloading them as I speak, and the dogs are out in the field messing around. So that's the status right now.
Wait, before you tell us more about the Sleeping Giant thing. Do you have hives in the forest, or like
we have up on Chestnut Tree Lane. We have an apiary, and we've had that apiary for quite some time. But what we do with strong hives is to keep them from swarming. We graft a number of frames with brood and honey and bees, and we put them into an empty hive until we get maybe four or five frames, and then it's a pretty strong little unit, but it still doesn't have a queen. And, of course, we can't take the parent queen from the hive because that would render that hive queenless. But we then we have queens that we purchase. This year we purchased queens from the West Coast, from California. Alvarez is the company, and the gentleman's name who supplies queens for most of the United States right now. There's a number of queen breeders. It's big business, and it's agriculture depends on bees. It's incredible how much of our food supply starts with honeybees. Right now, we have hundreds of hives rented to a number of commercial farms and orchards around the state. We feel a little impoverished because we have so many bees, but at the same time, we don't have them right now because they're in the orchards. So it kind of is an odd feeling. And of course, in this pandemic, there's an existential kind of quality to trying to make a new hive and start new life and adding queen bees and this and that. And, you know, kind of taking a look at our own lives. And it's just kind of like, ugh, you know, you just wonder if we're going to get through it all. And I'm sure we will. It's just it's an odd juxtaposition of efforts. That's all. We're doing very well. My helpers and I are committed to each other as far as working and staying as safe as we can. We do supply a lot of honey to places like the Common Bond and Time and Season and other areas that are doing curbside pickup and trying very hard to make the food chain and the food supply available to consumers, which we need to do. We're very fortunate in that honey is a non-perishable, and it's shelf stable. So there's not a lot we need to do as far as rushing it to market. We just make deliveries when people call, and they take it from there. But in any event, yeah, that's what we're up to these days.
Hey,
yeah.
Vincent, I just have a question.
Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We've been reading about this Japanese hornet out here in the West Coast. Anything that you might know about that?
No, it's just another thing that's been moved around through international travel, and it's it's one of the the things that's going to do us all in. I think eventually, it's just all these pests. I mean, and viruses and everything get moved through international travel, and it just. And it happens so quickly that it's so hard to respond quickly. Agriculture, many of the pests and mildews and diseases have been moved from different parts of the world. The mites that have infested bees 30 years ago came from, another part of the world. And now we have these Asian hornets. So it's like you can't catch a break. And we'll continue somehow, but it's one more thing that we'll probably have to worry about at some point.
Vincent,
right now we don't. Yeah.
Vincent, do those? I actually heard from my one of my family members, my great nephew, a grandnephew, yep. Is that how you say it? He mentioned it, and I'm glad it came up because he said, ask the bee man about it. So are these things, do they actually seek out honeybees for their diet? Is that what they do?
Yeah, I guess they feed on them, and that's what they do. They kill them and eat them. So it's I don't know a heck of a lot about it yet because we haven't had to deal with them yet. We have other issues that we deal with, outbreaks of the mites that have infested hives pretty much across the country. We have to be very, very careful of those, and we have to treat for those, and we usually do treat for them. After the honey has been harvested, that way there's no trace of any chemicals in the honey. But you have to do something to knock down these mites because they will just destroy every hive you have. And so that's something we live with every day. And it's probably more crucial that's dealt with up front by us right now. I think the hornet is, like I said, it would probably be something we have to deal with, but here on the East Coast, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it show up yet. So mm-hmm. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Maybe the frost line will hold it back, you know.
So, Vincent, I wanted to ask, you're talking about, in essence, creating new hives. In theory, couldn't they create their own queens?
They can. We do it to replace hives that have died or perished over the course of the winter. So it's a way for us to make up our losses. And here's the thing. Yes, they can swarm and reproduce as a unit, but 7 or 8 out of 10 of those swarms will die the first winter because of things like mites, because of the things that we can't give them in nature, but beekeepers can, which is treatment, food, whatever they need. We're in business to raise and keep healthy bees.
Okay.
Swarms just, like I said, it's a very small percentage that actually make it through the first winter. But yes, they can do that and will.
So basically you're just like making it more likely you'll get honey this year as opposed to waiting for the hive to create its own queen?
Well, the new hives that we make, we never really count on it. Every once in a while you end up with a percentage of those new hives that just go crazy and just do really, really well. And they will make honey the first year, but we don't count on it. We're kind of always planning a year or two in advance. So you just have to do that when you're dealing with livestock because it takes time for a hive to build up. You can't expect it to just start producing, and we don't. So
right.
we let things progress on a natural basis, and the queen that we give them will raise a good group of young bees and so on and so forth, and they'll build up, and hopefully the first winter they'll do just fine because we've managed them in a certain way.
Okay, thanks.
So, and then the second year we do hope to get a honey harvest out of that. So yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But it's a little like playing God. You really just kind of you go in and you create this new entity, and it's just it's great. It's a great feeling when it all works out. And it's just, but a lot can go wrong. we were just chuckling, transporting, how many people, as we were driving down I-95, knew we had a load of bees on the truck, it's just like, but it happens,
Janelle has a question. Can you take a question from me, Vincent?
Of course.
How did the hives adapt to the new queens that are introduced? Do they readily accept them and go on, or do they try to then form their own queen from within their own?
No, they readily accept them. The queens that we buy are they're kind of like a plant. They're like a hybrid. They're raised under the optimal conditions. We could do it here in Connecticut, but we'd have to wait for late June weather to raise queens naturally here in Connecticut. You need to have everything working for you. And that means the weather, the nectar flows, everything has to work together. So early in the season, we really can't do that. So the queens that we purchase, they come in little wooden cages with screen and a candy or a fondant plug on one end of the cage. So when we put them in the new hive, it takes 3 or 4 days. We uncork the fondant, but it takes 3 or 4 days for the bees that we've grafted into that hive to chew through the fondant. And they do because it's food for them. And in that process, they get used to the new queen's smell. and her pheromones, and they accept her readily. You know, as long as you feed them a little bit of sugar syrup as the process continues. And so what you're doing by feeding them a little bit of sugar syrup is artificially trying to mimic a nectar flow. When there's nectar flows out there, you can do no wrong when you're a beekeeper. If all of a sudden the nectar flow stops, or the weather turns violently cold or rainy for a series of days or even a week, forget about it. You're in big trouble trying to make new hives. Always they'll probably kill that new queen. So we try to time it so that the weather is pretty decent within a day or two of giving them the new queen. And you know, we've had pretty good luck. We're upwards above 95% of queen acceptance with the hives we make. And we don't make a huge number, but sometimes we have the bees to sell to other beekeepers. Last year we did and did well with that. This year we didn't because we had a few too many losses in the winter. So we just, even though it was a mild winter, just kind of cyclical. And so now we didn't sell bees this year, but we may change our minds later in the season and do that. So we're not sure yet, but it's we have a lot of bees.
How do they create queens like from scratch?
Well, you need, this is almost like a college course. I'm not sure we have the time to do it, but the bees will choose a fertilized egg, and they will engorge that fertilized egg with royal jelly, which is a substance in their head that they create. Royal jelly is like a white paste, and every fertilized egg that they choose to be a queen, they really engorge that one cell with a lot of this substance, and that has the genetic link as well as the necessary nutrition for the reproductive system of the new larva to develop into a queen. Every worker or every egg gets a little bit, but the one that they decide is going to be a queen gets a lot of it. And that's probably the most simple way to say that or explain how it happens. But then there's a 24-day incubation period of that one cell, and that cell hatches into a new queen. At that point, she's a virgin queen. She's got to go out and get mated. They mate in flight and come back to the hive, and that's it. She's reproducing eggs for the rest of her life.
So basically, it's just the queen gets fertilized once, and then that's it?
That's it. She's got enough sperm for the rest of her life, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot to it, though. I'm giving you a real short course because a lot can go wrong. I mean, you know, a dragonfly or a bird or something can pluck her out of the air, and
right.
You know, she may never make it back. So it's risky business. And, of course, nature always overproduces what they need because of those factors.
Right, but the queen has to go out basically once to get fertilized, and then otherwise it's safe in the hive.
That's it. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah. The only other time she'll exit the hive is when she swarms, if she does. And she may not swarm because, you know, sometimes the hive will say, well, we're going to produce another queen, and they'll do battle and one will kill the other, and so she may never leave the hive. There's different scenarios, and this is why it really is, people study it, and it's probably one of the most well-written about and studied subjects is Apis mellifera and honeybees and all of that. So yeah.
That sounds a little like Game of Thrones somehow. I don't know. very might be the basis of that show. So, Vincent, what else can you tell us about your trajectory in the next month or so as the weather really starts to turn and we start getting more days like this and even warmer?
Well, we hope we get more days like this, although it's, you know, today was supposed to be a cold day, and we stopped what we were doing this morning and said, you know what, this is a workable bee day, let's go. So we changed directions at 9 o'clock this morning, so let's go to a bee yard and make some hives. So that's where we're at. But also right now we're putting honey boxes on the strong hives and the queen excluders, which will keep the queen from laying eggs in the honey boxes, and we're hoping for a honey crop. So that's what we're looking at in the next month and a half. July 4th weekend, we'll probably start harvesting some honey. We were very surprised that some of the hives over at Sleeping Giant there in Hamden had already stored quite a bit of honey. We had just last week put on honey boxes, and there was quite a bit of honey in a number of them. So I don't maybe dandelions. It smelled a little bit like dandelion honey. Hmm. But you know, there's different flows or nectar flows now that are strong, provided that the weather cooperates. And that's a big if, because it's supposed to be very cold, as Guy mentioned, this coming weekend. And they're even saying in some of our areas where we keep bees, we probably will get wet snow out in Oxford and Southbury, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I had one more question. Let me see if I can remember what it was. anyone else have a question while I regather my thoughts here? Oh, I know. Missed it again.
Vincent, I have a question. Are the breeders that supply the queens, are they? Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of competition? Do you have a lot of choices in your providers on that? Is it, or do you?
Well, there are a lot of people doing it. It seems like when I go into the magazines and whatnot, and you know, it's sort of like you got to know your guy or your gal, and we've been with a number of different companies. Sometimes we deal. Actually, years ago, I was invited to work for this breeder out in Hawaii, and I probably should have done it. But it would have changed my life dramatically, but in any event, I did not do that. But we still use them, Kona Queen Company out in Hawaii, and Alvarez is in California. And it just depends on weather patterns. Hawaii always has good weather, but sometimes they have a problem getting the queen shipped all the way from Hawaii to where they're going to end up, and that is, as soon as it heats up here and the weather gets hotter, it's a problem because it's a big stress on the shipment of the packages of honeybees to be in transit that long. So we try to then purchase when we do or if we do from a place that's closer. So we choose California for that reason, and we've had pretty good luck. And everyone will advertise their bee as the best bee, and it has certain traits like a tomato or a cucumber, and they've been working on that probably their whole lives, trying to come up with a honeybee that produces a certain trait. You know, it could be a color, it could be a gentle bee, it could be a bee that produces more honey, it could be and these are all claims to fame, it could be a bee that... you know, is mite resistant or disease resistant. And, you know, really, we found that it really can't be proven quickly. It needs to go through a vetting period, which probably would take a lifetime of commitment to producing one particular bee. So, but we find that what we have is they're reliable and then they're nice people to deal with. So, and they produce a good bee. So it's not cheap. I mean, the going rate for you know, a queen bee is probably $35 to $50, so it's a chunk of money for a bug when you think about it, and you can spend a lot of money, and you can waste a lot of money if you're not careful.
Vincent, I thought of my question. I think I correct me if I'm wrong, but did you not say that bees happen to love poison ivy?
They do. They do. They love the blossoms on poison ivy. They're very small white flower, kind of a creamy white. And I was just amazed to see it. They just flock to it and engorge themselves in this. And I always thought to myself,
being it fairly well weeded, it doesn't have to be completely weeded, but the fewer weeds, the better it'll grow. But sometimes we've even let it grow with the weeds, and it doesn't seem to bother it that much. That's because we had a really good soil for it to work in. Yeah.
Right. Well, when I planted, I did put a pile of compost on top and then the leaves. But remember, it was just February that I did it, and I was surprised to see them popping up.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad you got it going, and you're not going to have too many problems with any creatures or viruses or so forth with the garlic. At least we've never had that in the problem, but probably one of these days something will happen, but right now it's not. So, and we have the black garlic, that's still good, and so we're pretty pleased with what's going on.
But I think that this weekend the floating row cover will have to go on the cold weather crops that have been planted out in the field. Even the onions, the lettuces will need some protection for
the frost
weather.
Yeah, that's right. And of course we got the row cover to do it, and then of course it'll need to be secured very, very carefully on the ground with rocks. Probably will be the best thing. Maybe some planks, but for the most part rocks. And to be sure that the row cover doesn't blow off, because we've had a lot of pretty heavy winds lately, and I don't know, but maybe we're going to continue to get them. Right. I wonder how Richard is doing with Molly.
I think we're pretty good. I think we have Molly ready to roll here, so if you all are ready and agreeable, let's bring her in. Molly Detmers, are you with us?
Hi, yes, I am.
Thank you so much.
Good show, Molly.
Hi, Molly.
Guy or Janelle, why don't you do the honors here and introduce our guest?
Well, Molly came to Common Bond, the food market down in the center of Huntington, from where she was assistant manager at the Mother's Store over in Hamden, Time and Season. And so Molly's been there since October, so she's had a good opportunity to observe and part and direct that store during a non-virus problem. And now with the virus problem, I'm sure there's a number of changes that we've experienced, but at the controlling level that she's at, probably a lot more that we don't know about. So, Molly, what is it that you've had to do to change in order to correspond to the latest antivirus activities?
Yes. So we have had to make a lot of changes. I would say we've seen the biggest changes through disruptions in our supply chain and just getting our products into the store. There have been huge changes, things that we can't get anymore, things manufacturers have stopped making, and just like our delivery days, it was very chaotic during the pantry loading phase back in March. We just saw sales explode.
Yes.
What are some shortages that you're experiencing, Molly?
Did you hear that, Molly? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that? I can't. Hello?
What are some products that are experiencing shortages?
Definitely. Toilet paper, as everyone knows, we haven't been able to get. chicken was another one that we saw right after toilet paper. All the immunity supplies we have, like zinc, elderberry. Luckily, we have most of them back in stock now, but there was a couple weeks that everyone, it seemed like, was trying to buy the same item.
How about the produce and, perishable foods?
Produce has been doing so well, and we haven't seen as many disruptions. Certain things like iceberg lettuce, that was something that we had difficulty getting. But for the most part, we haven't seen too many disruptions in the produce. And I don't know if some of that is because we do use the local produce a lot, local farms with our distributors. So
yeah.
I think that's been a little bit of a buffer in produce.
So right. So that would be overwintered crops that people are growing in hoop houses and that they're able to keep supplying through the winter. Molly,
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
You gotta really plant that phone right up against your ear. Yeah, I just wondered. So the local suppliers of produce, these are crops that were grown over the winter in greenhouses or hoop houses.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like most of the disruptions are coming from transportation a lot of the time and these big distribution centers.
Right. Tell us a little bit about how this catastrophe that has just swept the globe and is really hitting the United States at pretty much as harder than in anywhere at this point, how that affected your employment structure in the store. Did you have to furlough or lay off a bunch of your staff? And did you apply for grant funding from the federal government? Like, how is all that working for you?
Yes, yes. We have applied for the payroll protection, and we've been approved, so that's good. We did lose a lot of staff, a lot of people, just because they weren't comfortable working while this is all going on, some with underlying health conditions or living with people with underlying health conditions that we saw a lot, even our high schoolers who are cashiers, because they live with their parents, they had to stop coming to work. So we lost almost all of our cashiers right when things started to get really busy in the middle of March. And so we've been restructuring our positions and what the store has needed since then. We actually moved to a curbside pickup only model for a couple of weeks at the beginning of April. And that was in large part because we just didn't have the cashiers to stay open while putting in all of the precautionary measures into place. We had started requiring the staff and customers to start wearing masks, but that was before the executive order had been issued. So customers really weren't prepared for the changes we were making. We were changing our hours. We had these requirements about having face coverings. And it actually got to the point where it was a little bit too chaotic, and we had customers opening our sliding doors to come in when we weren't open yet, not wearing masks. And so all of that led to us closing down the store for in-store shopping for a couple of weeks while we kind of recuperated and put new systems in place. And we've been reopened to the public for a couple weeks. We've made major changes in making sure that people coming into the store are following our precautions. We're only allowing 5 people in at a time. And just really,
we've markers on the floor that remind people about distances between each other. I thought that.
Yes, we do. Yep, we have those throughout the store, at the registers. We have plexiglass at the registers for a barrier between the customers and our cashiers. And then we've also had people that have had to switch positions, sometimes a number of times. For instance, our kitchen staff and our deli staff, they were hardest hit by this. And so they've moved to fill the voids that we've seen with our staffing. So they've become our greeter at the front door. They've been the ones doing our deliveries when we started offering that service. And now they're being trained to be cashiers. So people have been really flexible, and willing to roll with the punches.
We're speaking with Molly Detmers,
Molly,
who is...
That the work gotten a lot harder, especially in filling those orders that came in online and just stacking those up and getting them out to people. I mean, the nature of the work changed, didn't it?
Absolutely, yes. We were, before this had happened, we were not at all set up for online ordering, for taking orders over the phone or through email. We just did not have the resources for it yet. So the staff basically came up with this system on the fly once we started taking curbside orders, and it's been growing since then. And we have a pretty good system in place for now as we work to get an online store going. But definitely, that was creating basically a whole department that we never had before, and it was really up to the staff to figure out how to make it work.
Molly, I want to ask you if this is not too tactless a question, but basically, in terms of the finances of an operation such as yours, are you doing demonstrably or measurably worse or maybe even better than you did as just a straight retail operation before?
That's a good question. Before we closed the store for in-store shopping, we had seen a huge surge in business. And then when we closed the curbside, we saw the complete opposite. We lost a ton of business. And now that we've been reopened, I can't say that it's not up to its normal, but it's working.
Mm-hmm.
We've definitely still seen hits, even as a grocery store.
No, last question for me, and I got to watch the clock because we're kind of, Pecan is running to some degree on an automated process here, and the next show has to start right on time at 12:55. But I wanted to ask you what your plan is for the summer in terms of keeping a stream or maybe increasing the stream of local organic produce coming from the family farms and the CSAs or whatever in this part of Connecticut. As I pointed out, the stores I shop at on the shoreline, they generally keep really stocking from the large suppliers from Pennsylvania, from, I don't know, parts of maybe New York State, and even from the West Coast, right on through the summer. I'm just wondering if this summer, given that there will probably be not so many farmers markets operating, whether those farms will be supplying your store and other organic produce stores a little bit more.
Yes, definitely. I'm actually really excited about this opportunity to shift even more to bringing in local products. We've always had a focus on local products and believe that a local food system is the most sustainable. And I think that this is a really good opportunity for us to move even further in that direction, as we've seen the supply chain disruption and the manufacturing issues. And our local people are still here, still supporting us. And I really think that this is going to be a good opportunity to switch to a more locally focused model.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it seems like this whole issue of, the food supply is just really been underscored so much. You know, the notion that American consumers can basically go out any time of the day or night and purchase whatever they want all over the place. They have their pick of stores. This whole thing is radically changing, you know, as we encounter the kind of thing that you described of literally, you know, operations that have shut down completely or are not able to distribute the packaged products. In terms of the produce, that same issue really comes up. And why do the local stores, the local organic health food stores, choose the stuff that has to travel 2,000 miles when they could get it from local farms?
Right. Yeah, it's a good point.
So I think we're going to be, hopefully, the paradigm is going to change, and people are going to really be thinking about this differently going forward.
Definitely.
Any last questions from Guy and Janelle?
Well, I think this is a great opportunity to focus on local produce, like we're saying here. If you're a locavore, you want to eat within 200, food grown within 200 miles more or less of your area, and the food will be fresher and healthier, and you'll be supporting more local regional economies and producers. It's possible to know and drive to that producer that has actually grown your food, and that's a healthy thing. It's more true, more honest, and more direct.
All right.
Richard, I think you've done a great job here today. Molly, we thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Molly.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Well, it's been my pleasure. It's Chris Ferrios here, all down the fort. We're keeping WPKN going. Thanks to Guy and Janelle for joining us again from Shelton.
Thank you,
Molly Detmers.
Richard, we'll be in touch regarding the next program.
Absolutely. Goodbye, all. This has been the Organic Farm Stand. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Stay healthy, stay safe, stay home.
Well, stay warm, right. Yeah. Stay healthy.
I can tell by the look in your eyes, baby. You need
by Novamont, a Connecticut company, manufacturers of Matterbee, a family of completely biodegradable and compostable bioplastics, which are being used to provide low environmental impact solutions for everyday products. More information is available at materbi.com/en.
Hey there. This is Binny Klein, host of A Miniature World on WPKN. Safe at home, as I hope you are. I want to invite all of you to a party on the radio. This Friday, May 8th, WPKN presents our second installment of All Together Now, a 12-hour multicultural musical event featuring a fantastic variety of dance music. 12 DJs will be joining us on the phone to talk about their amazing dance-driven sets of Latin New Wave, Big Band Jazz Swingers, Cajun Zydeco, 60s Dance Craze, Mod Generation, Funk and Soul, My Hour of EDM and 80s Faves, Goa Trance, Cold Wave, Dark Wave, genres new and old, genres I don't understand. We're all stuck at home, but we can still dance together, right? So rest up for All Together Now on WPKN, starting on Friday at noon. Take pictures. Get up and let WPKN move you. Post your pics on Facebook, in pajamas, in ball gowns. Friday at noon, only on WPKN.
Don't stop.
The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth